And if you want to be a part of the conversation too, then subscribe to my Patreon, www.patreon.com/Mr. Chaz, and join the conversation. Ask your own questions. Be a part of it for as low as $5 a month and get access to one-on-one coaching with me for as low as $20 a month.
I said, please don't bring any of those revolving door girls around our son.
First reaction. In my head.
How dare you?
Who the hell are you to tell me who I can and can't bring around my son? Stop, pause, breathe. And you know what? Take away ego. Put Asher first. She was absolutely right. It's not a good idea for Asher. It wouldn't be good for him to see this revolving door of women in his life after having gone through the traumatic experience of a divorce. So I said, you're right. So I started dating this woman, Nadia, who is my wife now, and I think it was about 7-8 months before.
And I hadn't met her yet. And I knew that Asher had met her because Ben told me all about it, you know, which was the right thing to do and the nice thing to do.
The nice thing. I don't know about the right.
So I had called. Asher was at Ben's house one night, and I had called because, like I do every night when he's there, to say goodnight to him. So he's talking to me and we're just having this little conversation. He said, hey, mom. I said, what? And he said, do you know Nadia? And I went, like, oh God. I go, no, honey, I don't. I know of Nadia, but I've never met Nadia. And he said, oh, well, here, I think you should talk to her. Puts her on the phone. And I was
hands,
like,
hands the phone.
Oh
to her.
My goodness.
Oh, I was enjoying every minute of that, like, one.
What's my name? What's my name? What's my name?
Welcome to Mr. Chaz's Parenting, Leadership, and Teaching podcast, where I introduce you to the people who can help you on your parenting, teaching, or leadership journey. Today, I have a pretty interesting, a little bit of a change of pace for our usual episodes. We have our happy divorce here, and instead of per usual, I'm not going to introduce them. I'll let them introduce themselves and what they want you to know about them, and then we're going to get started with the conversation. Go ahead, guys.
Well, my name is Ben Heltfond, and I was married to this woman,
Nikki DiBartolo,
for
7 years.
7 years.
We had a beautiful child together. A
beautiful son, and at some point when he was very young, we decided to end our marriage. And although that was a sad, traumatic experience, one thing that, looking back on it now in the theme of your podcast, is our job as parents is to be parents, whether we were married or together. And you know, through the process of divorce and then trying to find a different way than, say, my parents did it, 14 years later, we have a life that we could have never even imagined when we got divorced. We just wanted to be in the same room together. And so we would go about our normal life and post pictures on social media and of our life. And people are like, what's going on with the Heltfond DiBartolos? Like, is it some, you know, poly, some swingers thing? And it's not. But people, and then people started asking us questions. Friends got divorced.
How'd you do it? Like, what does it look like? How did you guys get to that place? And we're like, I don't know. How did we? Can't you guys write a book? And we're like, we don't know the first thing about writing a book.
So, we're not doctors. We're not lawyers. We're not therapists. But we are two people with the human experience. And this book is our human experience. And hopefully we'll, for those who listen to this podcast or read the book or hear our story, we'll just give people hope. And I think that's what, when people go through desperation, that's what people really want, is hope.
And he would deny the fact that he really does still love me. I think he had to learn how to love me again, but he really does still love me. It's a different kind of love, but he really does.
I do. Guilty. Guilty. Don't tell anybody that, Archie.
I can feel that too. So wait, are you guys in relationships right now?
We are. We are both remarried.
You're both remarried. Awesome.
Yes. You actually got married before I did, right? No, I got married before. Oh, yeah.
Hold on.
I had to back this up. Sorry, my timeline's wrong. No, I actually got married probably
a year, year and a half, maybe 2 years.
Sir. He's trying to throw me under the bus. I think it was like 3 years later.
Oh, okay. Something like that. Anyways, but 3 years later. We live 5 houses down from each other. I have 2 kids. with my wife. Nikki never had kids again, but we have this now blended, modern, ridiculously absurd family, and it's normal to us.
That is awesome. That sounds like the new modern family. So, okay, let's back up, because I think that a conversation, blending the families, is a whole nother conversation, but let's bring it back to the healthy divorce part, to the, you, like, how do you have, it sounds like you, even just the little bit of talking to you guys, the fact that you're able to work together, and you're, you know, still at least smiling together on camera, how do you have that healthy kind of divorce? How do you keep a healthy relationship, especially, I imagine, when there were a lot of hurt feelings? You mentioned it was, you know, somewhat of a traumatic experience. I don't know if it's a traumatic experience for you guys or one of you guys. Like, talk to me a little bit more about that. Like, how do you have a healthy divorce?
Well, I think the one thing, and you mentioned it, right, is that thing that we call feelings. One thing that we did eventually, or I did,
it wasn't perfect in the beginning, no, by any means.
But what we, but looking back on, I think the one thing that we did first is dealt with those feelings, the traumatic feelings of ending a divorce, the guilt, the shame, right, the anger,
separately. Like, we had to do it separately.
The resentment, and you know, unfortunately, I can say this now because I went through it. My first call was to a lawyer. Mistake number one. And then it went through, you know, I went through, you know, a sort of, you know, moment of clarity, where I had to find a different route, because I saw myself going down the same route as my parents. And so the second call I made was to a therapist and to my AA sponsor. And we started working, and Nikki was going to therapy herself, and we started working on the emotional side of it. And then we dealt with the business side of it, because they're two separate things. And if you put the two together, it's a ticking time bomb that's going to haunt you, you know, probably the rest of your life. And so that's the secret sauce, I think, is that we individually went on our journeys of cleaning up our side of the street. You know, as hard as it was for me not to look at Nikki's side and, you know, to tell her how to clean it up or what she needed to clean up, you know, we just went on, you know, we took a time out. We took a break. There's no rush. There's no award, really, for getting married or getting divorced the quickest. But the reward, the only reward for that is a lot of misery, a lot of wasted money, and most importantly, a lot of traumatic damage to your kids.
I would agree with that. But I think definitely we both needed to take, because, I mean, just as any divorce ours started the same way, that we wanted to, like, stab each other and, like, murder each other.
Yeah, divorces don't win on winning streaks. No, I mean, no,
they're not. Marriages, so I definitely think that that was like our moment that we had to say, okay, listen, it's time for each one of us to grow up and figure out what part we had in it, and stop pointing fingers at each other and figuring out how do we make ourselves better before we can make this better.
And then the follow-up to that is getting right and making it right. And I had called Nikki, and she's sort of, you know, I don't know if she knew exactly what I was doing as far as the work, but I had called her after, you know, I had that moment of clarity, if you will. And I said, I just need some time. I just need some time to not go through this process, but just to, you know, work on myself. She said, take as much time as you need. And through that process, you know, like I said, I was working on my side of the street. And then I called her and I asked her to coffee, because it was clear to me after that work that I wouldn't want to be married to me either. You know, as hard as that was to admit for a guy, you know, to man, is that I was not the man, I was not the person, I was not the father that I had imagined I was in my head. And so the next part of that was calling Nikki and making amends to her. And I called her, and looking back on it, was kind of a jerk move, but I didn't tell her why I wanted to meet her. You know, I just said, will you meet me at coffee? And, you know, only knows what was going through her head, because what she probably knew of me or saw, perceived me as this, you know, kind of jerk.
Yeah.
But my intention was, you know, I sat her down.
Like, oh boy. I think I called everybody I knew. And I was like, do I do this? Do I not do this? Do I bring backup? Do I have someone sitting in the coffee shop just in case?
You know, but the other thing is, I, you know, obviously been married to her a while and I knew what coffee she wanted. So it was sort of I had her coffee waiting as sort of a peace offering. Yeah. And then I just, you know, told her,
like, all right, I got coffee. It's not being thrown at me. It's just sitting there.
We had her in with the coffee.
Yeah. Extra hot. So in case, you know, I did
just
need to get
in case it all went bad.
But, you know, I just got real with her for the first time, I think, since we've known each other. And I told her I loved her and I told her I was sorry. And, you know, it went through some of the process that I had gone through. And then she in turn, you know, apologized to me and we joke, but I don't really know if it's, we joke probably because it's true, but I think it's the first and only time we've ever, you know, genuinely, authentically apologized to each other. But the most important.
Yeah, it was just his hit. So the most important time that we needed to apologize.
And look, at that moment, it didn't turn the switch, you know, and it became our happy divorce. But there was just a freedom. There was just room, you know, curiosity, room to breathe a little bit, you know. And so that's at that moment, it was the beginning, you know, of, you know, what we call our happy divorce. But, you know, just that moment of intimacy or vulnerability with each other opened up some doors that we probably didn't even know were there.
Let me ask you this, because it's, I think a lot of people don't get to that point, right? They go to the lawyer and they continue on going down the path. You had your parents as an example of what you didn't want to do. And so you saw yourself going down this path and you're like, okay, hold up. What can I do differently? But there was still some inner work. You acknowledge like, okay, like I haven't been the person that I imagine myself to be. Like, what sparked that moment of clarity to be like, okay, I need to like apologize. I need to clean up my side of the street. Like, I need to work on me and to get out of that just blame. Because it's really easy to stay in that of just like, oh, it's all her fault, all the things that she did, X, Y, Z. What was that moment of clarity? Like, what sparked that?
So, like I said, I had made a phone call. I left the house, this angry, bitter, resentful, just scorched earth, all her fault, you know, just like you said, because that's comforting. That's comfort for me as messed up as, and I love the way you said that, because that's, you know, pattern of my life is to blame other people and to not take a look at myself. So I called a lawyer and I told him what I wanted to do.
A typical lawyer,
right? Like,
not even like
a shark lawyer, right? Yeah. And when in these, you know, waters of desperation that we wanted to write our book for hope, so swim, you know, lawyer, divorce lawyers, religious extremists, you know, cults, you know, because people just want to, you know, when they're desperate, they want anything. They'll drink the Kool-Aid and put on the Nikes. But I called this lawyer. I told him what I wanted. And he said, "Great, we'll go it. We'll do it." And he took a big, nice retainer and he wrote me this, you know, exactly what I wanted. It was a game plan, a manual on how we were going to destroy Nikki.
I always joke that it's the same game plan. It gives everything.
Oh, no doubt.
Just changes the names on the top.
Yeah. Right. And it charges, like, charges a lot of money.
He just prints it with the different names.
And I always carry this backpack around. It's sort of like my Linus blanket. And I put it in the backpack and I carried it around and I didn't open it for some reason. And I was on a red eye. Back from LA to Florida, and I decided to take it out and I started reading it, and I don't know what it was at that moment, at that time, you know, maybe it was the red eye with everyone sleeping and just one light on me, or, you know, whatever it was, but I read 2 pages of it, and all of a sudden, for the first time in a long time, I got honest. And I said, you know, I read it and it gave me that feeling, you know, you know, instinctual, what, you know, sixth sense, whatever you want to call it. And I didn't feel right. And then I got to the point where I admitted to myself that there's no way in the history of relationships that it can be one person's fault. It takes two to make a relationship and it takes two to ruin it. And so I put it away. I didn't read the rest of it. It cost me an arm and a leg, but it was the best money I ever spent. I called him on Monday and said, you know, thank you, but no, thank you. And so that was my, you know, burning bush, that, you know, made me take a different look. Cause I saw and I think the reason I was able to tap into that was, like I said, my experience with my parents, and they were, the '80s, they got divorced in the '80s. It was War of the Roses was the hot movie. And my parents' divorce was War of the Roses. And let me tell you, that is a tough spot, for a young kid or any kid to be in, where your parents are literally feeding you poison, hoping the other one dies. And it doesn't end. It doesn't end when I, you know, turned 18 and I went to college, because then I had my graduation from college, and I always had to worry about where mom was going to sit, where dad was going to sit. Did I go up to mom first last time? Maybe I should go up to dad. And it's just, it's not fair. It's not fair to hand these kids this, the emotional bill, for them to pay when they had absolutely in any of the decisions along the way.
No, and I think for me, it was the fact that my parents are still together 52 years later. So I never got to experience anything that Ben got to experience growing up. So I only knew, you know, my family. Like, I always knew it as one unit. So the last thing on earth I wanted to do, I was like, I wasn't going to be, oh my God, I'm the first one to ever get divorced in my family. I'm like, I'm not going to do that to my son. I'm not going to pull him apart. What can I do? And I'm like a fixer. So everything I do in life is to try to fix something and make something better. So I'm like, what am I going to do? Like, I can't ruin this child's life because his dad and I couldn't make it work. So everything I did was like the polar opposite in the beginning of what Ben did. It was, should we get back together? Let's try this. Let's do this. Let's go here. Let's go find this therapist. Let's go do this. And then I was like, okay, but none of that stuff's going to work. I mean, we really don't want to be together. So let's try a different route. So I just kind of sat back and said, all right, let's just let him do what he needs to do. And hopefully he's not going to keep going. And if I try to go the other route, maybe he'll come back around.
You killed me with kindness? Is that what you're saying?
I kind of tried to. Tried not to push you.
Right.
Like, so I was like, I just can't. I can't do this to him. You know, so, I mean, it was important for me to, you know, kindergarten, graduation or whatever, for us to be able to sit in the same row. And for us, like, we didn't have to like it at that minute, but I didn't want him to feel like Ben felt like every time he would go to something and he'd have to go, dad's going to get upset if I hug dad first, mom's going to be pissed. And like, that was what I didn't want. I didn't want to put his feelings in the middle of that.
Mm. So, yeah, it sounds like you were kind of, you were emotionally kind of there, Nikki, and you were, it sounds like you were kind of waiting for him to catch up while he was going through his process. Or
scared to death that I was going to ruin this child. So it was like, you know, I was more scared. I don't know if I was quite emotionally there. I had to work at emotionally getting there. I was scared to death, to be honest.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Maybe you were kind of like frozen, like, I don't know what to do. If I do anything, it might be the wrong step. And Ben is like, I'm taking action right now. And it's beautiful, because in both of your processes, maybe that's exactly the way that it had to happen for you guys to come back together. And so that's great. And now you're able to, you made it to that moment. Now you made the moment, you apologize, everything's out on the table. First time genuinely apologizing, maybe even, you know, maybe first time being really honest with each other in a long time.
Right.
And now the work starts, right? And now the work of like, okay, so how are we going to actually have this healthy relationship? You've got it all on the table, but it doesn't stop here at this coffee shop. What did that process look like? Were there like, she's like, okay, now let's play some ground rules? Was it kind of like as you go? You know, how did you guys kind of work that out? And what are some of the lessons, big lessons, that you want to pull out and share with everyone?
First things that made a difference to Ben was he looked at me and said, do you have an issue with joint custody?
50-50.
And I said, absolutely not. Even though in my heart I was like, hell yes, I do. Like, but it's not what's right. Like, obviously, as a mom, I was like, I don't want my child being away from me, but I knew it was the right thing to do. And I said, absolutely not.
It wasn't easy, right? I mean, when you're dealing with, now you move into the business side, but it was a lot, I shouldn't say it's not simple. It's a lot easier once we had cleaned up some of the wreckage of the past. Once we weren't making emotions or I'm sorry, decisions based on these emotions. And that is, you know, made this process where we then met at that same coffee shop 4 or 5 times. And we actually hammered out our whole divorce agreement and then handed it to the lawyers and said, draw this up. And so it wasn't always,
I mean, obviously there's a lot of issues that come up with, you know, financial things and things like that, that aren't easy, but it was one of those things that we just said, okay, we're putting him first, no matter what it is, he comes first.
Yeah. And so the, you know, the business side of it or the divorce thing, we moved into that. And once I had asked her that question, I think I said something, well, all the other S, like that's the big issue for me was the custody and, you know, shared parenting, whatever it is, with my son and Nikki, you know, graciously, or, you know, said that absolutely not. I don't have a problem with it. I want you to spend as much time and equitable time as I did. And then the other stuff sort of just fell into place. You know, we had a lot of assets together, and, you know, house and all the other things, espresso machine, you know, all the other things, but we weren't making decisions. I wasn't, you know, Nikki wasn't spending 3 hours with the lawyer on the espresso machine because she knew it meant something to me. You know, the 3 hours on a lawyer, people can buy 10 espresso machines, but with the emotional side of it, just it gets people so blinded. And so we worked it out pretty quickly, and relatively unscathed, I think.
No, and I think once that stuff was done, the family part kind of baby steps into place.
Yeah, and I think it's the thing I just want to reemphasize is after that coffee shop, after we got divorced,
dinner together yet.
It wasn't like all of a sudden we have this happy divorce and ridiculous life. But what we did do is, no matter what happened, we were committed to putting our son first. So we would sit next to each other at baseball games.
Oh, yeah.
We would sit next to each other at plays. And if there were, you know, 100 other seats,
probably both sweating in the beginning.
Oh yeah. If there were 100 other seats, or the 99, I would have rather had than the one, you know, next to Nick. But we put our big boy pants on, you know, and we showed up. You know, Nikki started dating somebody that we, you know, knew, while we were married. So that was a big test to this new spiritual Ben, right?
I'm married to him.
He's married to him, right? She, and trust me, like looking at it, she never looked at me like she looks at him, right? I mean, that's Nikki in love. You know, not the way she looked at me, but it was tough. It was a blow to my ego. It was all of a sudden this big test, you know, to this new, you know, road that we were on. And, you know, I remember this one time, one of the first times that he came around was Asher's baseball game. And I was a coach, and, you know, the kids would get out of the dugout first and not clean up their mess. So the coaches would sort of, you know, clean it up. And Asher went running over to Chad and Nikki, Chad's her husband. And I remember walking over there and just getting this, like, you know, the washing machine in my stomach, and just my face was, you know, starting to explode. And I just remember saying to myself, what's best for Asher?
I just kept thinking it was the tan from you being in the baseball field.
What's best for Asher? You know, and then I walked over there, and the first thing I did before, you know, even acknowledged Nikki, was I gave Chad a hug. And just to, you know, diffuse the situation, but most importantly, know, Asher, that it's okay for you to love this man. It's okay for you to be, you know, and look, I didn't want to do it. You know, I there was many other things
I'd get the baseball bat out of.
Exactly. That was, you know, that crossed my mind too. You know, but again, then we say we faked it till we made it, right?
It's true.
And that's absolutely true. There were very many uncomfortable situations in the beginning that we just pushed on through.
Wow. And that is, you know, I talk a lot about allowing children to tolerate have their emotions, and, you know, to, you know, we shouldn't always be trying to take away their emotions from them all the time, or trying to force them to feel an emotion, making them sad or whatever. And that's one of the reasons, why to build up that skill, like, you had that washing machine in your stomach, and you had to tolerate a lot of really big emotions, and for you to acknowledge that. You're like, okay, I'm feeling this way, but I'm still going to, like, I have this emotion, but I'm not going to let it drive the decision that I'm going to make. Like, I can tolerate, I can handle hard things. I can go and sit next to her at the play. I can go and sit next to her at the baseball game. I can give a hug to this man. Like, that was, I'm sure that was a really big moment. Just that nonverbal gesture, I'm sure that was really powerful for everyone involved.
Right, Brady. Yeah. Yep.
For sure.
Can I just add one more thing that you brought up to about having kids express their feelings and going back to my parents' divorce, you know, there's the event, right? There's the divorce. What happened in my parents, and there's no blame. There's no, you know, I've forgiven. I have compassion for my parents. They didn't sit around and premeditate how they were going to screw up my life. But there was the event. Dad came in, mom came in, said, we're getting divorced. And there was no room for expression from us, right? And what that internalized, or how I internalized that, was something's wrong. I don't like the way I'm feeling, so I must be bad. Mm. And, you know, one of the things that we've done with Asher along the way is, you know, when we told him, we let him express it, we got him, you know, he went to therapy. He always had an open door. He would write a lot. Yeah. And if he wanted to spend the night
a pen and paper next to his bed. And during the divorce, he would just write. It would sometimes be like things that
had nothing to do with it.
Nothing. But he just would write.
And one of the things that, you know, we did is we removed it. So if he said, Dad, I want to spend one more night at mom's, or vice versa, it wasn't, oh, hell no. You know, mom had 14 nights last month, and this is going to set her. But just allow him the freedom to express himself.
Right, because there were times that he would say, you know, we would try to do like 6 days or 7 days on and off. And he came to me, because I normally would do the calendar at the beginning of every month, you know, asking him if Ben was going to be out of town or whatever. And Asher came to me one day and he said, you know, mom, it's a little long. And I said, what's a little long? And he goes, the time I'm away from each of you is a little long. And I said, okay, so what would you like it to be? And he said, 4 days. And I said, all right, 4 days it is. So, I mean, now that he's older, it's like six, but I was like,
What age was that?
I bet he was seven.
Yeah. Around eight. That. And yeah, he was three, four when we got
divorced. But he was like, mom, it's too long. And I said, okay, I get it. I go, you tell me how you're like, you know, you tell me. And if this is, you know, if it needs to be 2 days, we'll make it 2 days and we'll figure it out. I'm like, you're the one that has to be comfortable with going back and forth, because it's a lot for them. It's all the stuff and all the books and all this and all that. And my favorite shoes are here, but my favorite shoes aren't there. Well, can I bring these shoes over there? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, one of the most powerful, sobering moments, I think Asher was 11, 12 years old. You know, we'd been separated for years. We were on a fishing trip, and he starts talking to me. And he says, you know, Dad, this divorce is tough on me. Wow. And look, you want to talk about ego. My first reaction was, you little ungrateful little SOB. You don't know what, you know, your mom and I have sacrificed and all that, right? But, you know, luckily just stopped and paused and was able to, you know, in that moment, because I paused, have that empathy of somebody who'd been through a divorce. And mine was awful. My parents' divorce was awful. But just the logistics, just the and look, at the end of the day, he wouldn't choose for his parents to get divorced. So that like that's the overarching theme. But just the logistics of going to another house, going, you know, forgetting your math. I remember forgetting my math book, or forgetting, you know, like Nikki said, shoes or uniform, whatever it is. I mean, just the logistics of it is hard.
Yeah.
And then I was just able to say, you know, I understand it and share my experience, you know, with him. Not the ugly stuff. To try to compare and make him feel shame for feeling that way.
You're like, oh boy, you have no idea, dude. No.
But what, you know, what really sticks out to me is, in like, this is the work that I think some people maybe don't get to see when they don't have the moment of clarity, and they, you know, they don't, you know, you've clearly created a level of safety for your child to where he does feel like he can express, you know, this doesn't like, this is hard on me, right? Like, that's a really powerful statement to yeah. say, and that he feels safe, that he can say, you know, like, the 7 days is too much. And, you know, people can listen to guys and they're like, oh, like, this is the way they did it. Like, let me try to do it exactly the way that they did it. And what I would say is, you know, checking in, having that relationship where you have the open communication, where they do feel safe enough where they can express those kind of things to you, express their feelings, and being able to check in. Like, I think that is really one of the most important, the foundational aspects to all of this, because you might be doing for another person or another stage in his life, like, 7 days might be perfect. And you can't always predict how someone else is going to process an event. And so that's why that relationship and that safety and that communication is so important. And just even just from those two stories, I'm sure it's not always perfect. And, like, you know, everyone's got their internal struggles and things like that. But just from those two stories and your responses that is so powerful, because it is so easy to get, like, wrapped up into, are you, like, do you know, like, I've worked so hard
to what just talking about,
yeah, like, you don't know hard, like, it's so easy to get caught up into that, you know, whether or not, like, it's true or not isn't the point. What's
it doesn't
true
matter.
The point is that I'm feeling this way. I'm struggling. And that's really powerful for you guys to be able to do that. Do you feel like during this process, has the way that you've parented, has that changed at all? When you guys were together, did you have similar styles of parenting? How did that, obviously some smarts. So, yeah, let's talk about it.
We have, I would say, different parenting styles.
Uh-huh.
And I think that they would have been
the same
if we were married. Yeah. So we both kind of had to just take a step back and go, okay, if we were living together, they'd be different. So I don't really know how to go ahead. How would you describe my parenting style?
a Bell helicopter?
Oh.
No.
Oh.
No, I mean, no.
Tell me more.
No. Look, I she is. I mean, but I like am. Like she.
My only child.
But also, like she, you know, talked about earlier, she's a fixer. I mean, that's her. You know, she gets in there and she wants to, you know, do it. She does it to me.
But yet, still. I'm still like his buddy and his mom.
Right.
And that's
But she's a protector. I mean, she's still, you know, with me now. Like 14 years later,
the girl that breaks his heart is in big trouble.
Yeah, she's gonna kill him. but you know, I think one thing that, regardless, the communication, look, we fight. I mean, we
do, like brother and sister.
Right. Yeah, and some of it's over Asher. Some of it's over parenting. And that would be.
Some of it's just because he's being a jerk.
Who, me?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
He's like, I'll accept it.
Yeah, guilty. But you know, the thing is, though, that when we do fight, it's about Asher, or about parenting, or about, you know, him going out. You know, I'd like to give him a little bit more free rein and go make him go, you know, 17, make him go make some adult mistakes.
I let him have, I gave him an adult. I let him go out when we were in Key West.
Yeah, yeah.
And I checked my phone and I was like, I don't remember him coming in my room and saying hi to me. I checked my phone at 2 a.m. He's just on his way home. I'm like, oh,
see, no. That's the other thing. This app that she has that can track them and do, like, she gave it to me.
Parents have it.
I know, but not me. I mean, I've never checked, but anyways,
I check it like 24 hours a day.
I think the one thing is she's, you know, a little bit, and it's not bad. She wants to protect, you know, he's coming up on a big decision on where he's going to go to college. Mm-hmm. We have a community college here in Tampa called Hillsborough Community College.
I would love it if
it was
here.
Up to her,
yeah,
that's where he would go. So that's, you know,
I'd get him an apartment.
Meanwhile, I want him to get out of the state of Florida, go as far as possible, you know, go to college, make some adult mistakes.
I would love for him to go to Notre Dame.
Okay. Well, there's something. That's there's in something. South Bend. The parenting, I'm married. I have kids. We have different parenting styles. Yeah. Right. And so I, of course, I'm going to have different parenting styles with my ex, which is frustrating. And it probably causes 99.6% of our arguments.
Yeah.
But that's probably would be the same if we were married.
Probably.
Yeah.
If. Well, you know, whether you're a helicopter or you're giving him free, he is going to make some mistakes regardless. So it's not, you know, that's one thing that we can be sure of.
And for sure.
Yeah. So let's actually, so he is 17 now. He's about to go off to college. What do you think that he kind of would say about the divorce and the, you know, his relationship? And, you know, tell me more about the blended family and kind of like what that experience is like, and how did we get there from the moment in the coffee shop to the hug at the baseball game. And I imagine that was a big moment. You know, how do we get to where we're married and we're doing Thanksgiving together? Like, we are all just this one big blended family. How do you have those conversations? You know, when people, I assume it's not just, I'm sure his friends ask, like, oh, wait, is that your
family? Crazy.
Yeah. Talk to me about that. Like, what those conversations are like and how you guys talked about it and how he feels about it. If, you know, he's talking about it.
Well, I always like to tell this one story about him. He was probably four and a half. And I had not met Ben's now wife, Nadia, yet, but I knew of her. Ben had told me about her. I knew that she was in the picture. I knew that Asher had met her. And
before you tell that story, I just want to say, I know, but no, because I think this is another point that's important is Nikki, you know, I was doing the D-bag, you know, middle-aged man thing and, you know,
like driving fast cars and picking up young chicks that barely wore clothes.
Yeah. Diamond Mercedes, the whole deal. But she had asked me to not, you know,
I said, please don't bring any of those revolving door girls around our son.
First reaction in my head.
How dare you?
Who the hell are you to tell me who I can and can't bring around my son? Stop, pause. Breathe. And you know what? Take away ego. Put Asher first. She was absolutely right. It's not a good idea for Asher. It wouldn't be good for him to see this revolving door of women in his life after having gone through the traumatic experience of a divorce. So I said, you're right. So I started dating this woman, Nadia, who is my wife now, and I think it was about 7-8 months before.
And I hadn't met her yet. And I knew that Asher had met her because Ben told me all about it, you know, which was the right thing to do and the nice thing to do.
The nice thing. I don't know about the right.
So I had called. Asher was at Ben's house one night, and I had called because, like I do every night when he's there, to say goodnight to him. So he's talking to me and we're just having this little conversation. He said, hey, mom. I said, what? And he said, do you know Nadia? And I went, like, oh, God. I go, no, honey, I don't. I know of Nadia, but I've never met Nadia. And he said, oh, well, here, I think you should talk to her. Puts her on the phone. And I was like,
hands the phone to her. Oh,
my goodness.
Oh, I was enjoying every minute of that one.
And I was just like, you know, like I was shocked and scared. But I, you know, was sweet and nice and but I just sat back and I was like, I hung up the phone and I was like, this was this kid's way of saying, listen, there's a girl in my life. You don't know her, but you need to, because obviously she's important enough to be here. And
it's time.
It was time.
He told us it was time.
He told us it was time for me to know her. And I was like, I'll be darn. This four-year-old kid was like, okay, you two, get your crap together.
and, you know, as far as the evolution.
I think what.
Phone just rang. The evolution of you know, our post-divorce life and always putting Asher first, the best of our ability, really what, you know, came to, you know.
We had to have conversations with our spouses, though, and the people we were dating. And it was like, listen, guys. we don't want each other. We don't want to be together, but we want to be together, like as a family. Yeah. So you guys need to accept and appreciate and join in what we're trying to do, or it's never going to work.
Yeah. And we've tried, and actually that was a great way of saying, I think we struggled with the way of saying that, like they wouldn't be in our life if they weren't, yeah. you know, on board with what we're going to do, because this isn't baggage, but this is something we're bringing into the relationship. We had this kid, we were married. You're not going to come in and, you know, not destroy, but you're not going to come in and be a disturbance to what we're trying to, and to their credit, they've been a complete addition. You know, it was a bicycle for many years, just Nikki and I, you know, two wheels. And then all of a sudden you add another wheel and it becomes a tricycle with Chad, and then another wheel with Nadia. Yeah. And they all have to work together, and they have all worked together pretty seamlessly. And it sort of came to at least the tipping point, the denouement, or whatever you want to call it, of the divorce, when Asher wrote his high school essay to get into high school. You know, Nikki and I didn't make him do this, but it was people you admire. And he had wrote about his mom and dad for what they had done with their divorce. And it's actually in the book. And so that was the, you know, moment where we're like, okay, you know,
we're doing something right
with him. And
we started like baby steps. We would have birthday parties together, and we would try to have dinners together. And then we tried to go on our first vacation together. It was like Thanksgiving, and it was just a little too soon. And we both kind of fought a little bit on our
first fought week. A lot of it.
And so it was like, okay, that was too soon. Let's take a couple steps back. We'll continue with dinners. And like, you know, we didn't shut the door. And then we tried it, and we tried it like a few months later, and that one worked. And then we tried it again, and that one worked. And then, so, I mean, we're like, okay, we got this. Like this, we're not pretending anymore. We're actually friends. Like you have to go back to the, like for me, I had to go back to understand like, hey, I loved this guy just because we're not married. Like, what did I love about him? It's still there, whether I'm not in love with him anymore, but the reason I fell in love with him is still there. So I just needed to figure out how to get back there.
Yeah. And it sort of came full circle. I mean, it really did. And again, for people listening, this wasn't something we set out or even was in our realm of possibility at that coffee shop or before that coffee shop. I mean, really, we just wanted to be. So our happy divorce to us isn't this, you know, land of unicorns and rainbow waterfalls that we live in, right? You know, we live five houses down, we travel, we do, you know, Nikki and I took Asher to Africa on a safari, just the three of us.
Two years ago.
But our happy divorce is if you can avoid having your kids pay that emotional bill for something they had no choice in. They didn't pick the restaurant. They didn't order the wine. They didn't order the food. But yet they get stuck with the, if you can avoid them paying that bill, that's our happy divorce to us. So it's not this life that we're leading, you know, but it's just putting your big boy pants on, swallowing your pride a little bit and ego, and, you know, doing what's best for your kids and taking on that responsibility you sort of inherently took when you decided to have him or her or them.
Yeah.
So, kind of using that analogy of them paying the emotional bill, it's both of you who had to take on that bill together and had to do that inner work together, and then also healing the relationship. It sounds like through these little events, like these little moments where you are kind of going into moments of stress and healing and like, okay, like we've reached one milestone. Okay, like we've talked, we had, oh, like maybe we actually can be friends. And then you kind of did this big jump. It was like, okay, that was a little overwhelming, too much, like a lot of time together. We talked about maybe there were some topics that were still sensitive nerves. Were there, which actually makes me have another question. Were there, you know, let me wrap up the thought first, but you needed to kind of heal your relationship between the two of you so that, you know, he feels more of the family unit and feels like he's there's not this big loss or big disruption and tear in the family just because you had a divorce and your marriage relationship didn't work out. In the healing process, were there certain like nerves or certain conversations that you had to like, hey, let's like, we never really fully resolve this. Let's kind of resolve this and move on. Or there's things like, maybe it's just better that we don't talk about it as much. Or I'm curious.
Yeah, I mean, I'll answer that. I think even today, you know, Nikki is Nikki, you know? I mean, I am me in my, you know, the patterns me, right? I mean, we all have sort of these things. That's not necessarily us, but sometimes we do, we've used them just to protect ourselves or whatever. But, you know, she they still strike a nerve with me sometimes. I mean, she's an Italian spitfire. You know, she's quick on the tongue. Sometimes she's a little mean, quite frank. So am I, right? I mean, that's the anger is, right, you know, and so, but I think that it's one thing, you know, to truly love somebody. And have that space where, look, it still kind of irks me, but then it's just like, okay, that's Nikki, you know, or that's, you know, her, she didn't mean it. She didn't, you know, it's just her deal. So I wish I could say that we don't have a strike, you know, I haven't struck a nerve with Nikki in so long, but yeah, I mean, it happens on the regular.
It does.
You know, but I don't think it's, you know, something that, you know, different than it was 14 years ago or when we were married or whatever. I mean, I think that maybe that's friendship compared to marriage, or maybe it's just, you know, a true love for somebody that, you know, you're able to accept the whole person, you know, for who they are. But I don't know the nerves, but, and maybe that was why that trip that we took, you know, the those wounds were maybe a little fresher. You know, we haven't, I hate the word, wrong word, but transitioned into this, you know, new realm of this relationship. But, you know, that moment in Montana was just a little bit too early and awkward. And it was the first one we went on with Nadia, my wife, and Chad. So everybody was sort of together.
Yeah.
Nadia and I weren't married. I don't think even you and Chad were married yet.
I don't know.
It was just, you know, one of those things. And you know, luckily it didn't, you know, derail it or derail what we have today, because that would have been a shame.
Yeah. Just take a deep breath and go, okay, we're just going to put the vacations on pause for a minute.
Yeah. And another thing, like if you had asked me after that vacation and asked Nikki, I think it was, you know, okay, we found our limit, right? We found our boundaries of what we can do as a co-parent, as a divorced couple. You know, again, however many years later, we were on a safari together in the middle of Africa, just the three of us. There was one thing I just want to add too about Asher and his ability now and his life now to see healthy relationships, marriages, and parents that love each other, but also, you know, he gets to be a big brother, in my house, to two little kids, but also gets to go to Nikki's, you know, and be that only child. So it's sort of the, you know, the best of both worlds for him, but most importantly, you know, gets to see what, you know, healthy relationships look like. So when you look at the three choices for your kids, you know, you can stay together, and be miserable.
Right.
Right. And some people do that. And I think kids pick up on that too, or, you know, get divorced and wore the roses situation that I grew up in. Or, you know, the third is it happened. It's going to happen. You know, a lot of marriages end in divorce. But what a difference we can make in our kids' lives if we just trust the process and don't rush and deal with the emotional side first before, you know, calling the shark attorney.
Yeah. And, you know, one thing I heard you I think it's Nikki mentioned, or maybe it was both of you guys who mentioned it, about how he does a lot of writing. And a lot of times these experiences, like, we just think of them as just very binary, just a negative experience, but there's so much. He's, like you just kind of highlighted there, yes, so many more opportunities to, like, to understand and see different kinds of relationships, to be in different kinds of relationships as, like, as the older brother or a younger brother or as the only child. You know, he has the, also to be able to see, and I'm sure that's, you know, of his, may have friends who are divorced, or especially during this time who are, you know, divorcing, for him to have that experience and to know that, like, it's not so much about the event, but how you handle the event, and that, like, there are more options than just those first two options, right? That is so powerful. And then, you know, it's going to bring up a lot of emotions in him, even just with the frustrations of figuring out the logistics of things and forgetting your math book. And then you remember that, oh, I forgot my math book. Like, oh, like, why can't it just be easy? Like, those are hard feelings to, you know, learn to work through. But you guys,
for really adults, they are much less kid. Yeah. I mean, right there.
Yeah, 100%. And there's kind of been, I've been hearing your story. There's kind of been these moments where you've really all been growing together. And, you know, I don't think, like, I think that you, if you hadn't grown, if you just stopped your growth at the time you decided to, you know, divorce and separate it, and there was no more growth, that's what would have huge, like, would have hugely and likely negatively affected Asher. But the fact that you were able to grow and kind of not overreact and to, you know, have these, allow him to express his emotions and writing. And I'm sure that's a way, an outlet that he's probably learned, because he's had these big emotions. And me, you know, growing up, my parents were still together, but there was a lot of emotions internally I remember feeling, and just the practice. I remember when I started the daily practice of just kind of journaling, writing it out, like, that is so, the expression of emotions is so powerful, rather, because the alternative is holding it in. And that's never going to be a good idea. That's always going to have some kind of negative outcome if we just hold it in. And so, you know,
well, it works. I think it works, you know, as a child, right? Whatever sort of thing you put in there to protect those feelings. I think for me, at least, they have an expiration date, right? It's eventually they expire, you know, into causing negative stuff. At least it did for me in my life. But they worked as a kid. Right. They worked in that moment where I felt uncomfortable. And, you know, before I found drugs and alcohol, that helped that too. But, you know, but unfortunately, you know, that protective layer, or those protective patterns or thoughts have an expiration date, you know. And one of the things, you know, about Asher is, when I think he's realized this, at least I, you know, talked to him about it when he wrote that essay, that, you know, life is not going to be easy. I mean, nobody, you know, has an easy path of life, and there's going to be stuff that's going to happen. There's going to be, you know, hard times, but, you know, everything that's happened to me in my life negatively, including my divorce to Nikki, you know, after time, looking back, hindsight's 2020, it was a good thing. And it added positive things to my life. And Nikki's divorced it too. And I think my divorce did too. But after reading Asher's essay, I think he sort of got it too. That although it was hard, although it was bad, look at his, you know, life now, look at his parents, look at his, you know, brothers and sister, and, you know, living five houses down from each other, where he can, you know, just walk back and down. He, you know, having him walk through the front door at both of our houses, we talk about how great it is. Hey, there's my son, you know, when he's at Nikki's, or when he's at my house.
Well, thanks for coming on and having this conversation. This has been really enlightening for me too, and I've loved kind of learning about your story. And thank you for sharing kind of tips of, because there, especially during this time, there are a lot of divorces that are happening, and people who, you know, maybe the marriage didn't work out, but they still really they still really want to make it their family work out, right? So thank you so much for sharing this. I think a lot of people are going to get a lot out of it. And so tell us more, like for people who are on the journey or people who want to learn more, tell us about, you know, I know that you guys have a book. Tell us a little bit about that, plug your stuff, and then.
Yeah, I mean, Our Happy Divorce, available anywhere books are sold. That, you know, we have Instagram and Facebook, everything, Our Happy Divorce, all that stuff. And I think just the main, you know, message that, like we said earlier, is that this is just our story. Right. You know, this is our experience. We hope it brings strength and hope to people that if you're going through this, that there can be a different way. There are so many good resources out there besides our book, or forget about our book. But I mean, when we got divorced, there weren't coaches, there weren't, mediation, you know, collaborative divorce was sort of new. But it wasn't really part of any Florida statute, although we did it. But there's just so many good people out there doing so many good things that don't call your divorce attorney. Just, you know, when you make that decision, don't call your friend who got divorced, had a good divorce attorney, you know, spent 2 years and got everything she wanted. And if you sit with a divorce attorney and he says, or she says, yes to everything you say, run. Because that's impossible and it'll never happen. But I think, you know, I'd be a little flippant, but really the idea is, coach, you know, a therapist who specializes in divorce, and just work on the emotional side. I promise you that made all the difference in the world to the life we have today.
It did.
Sure. Work on the emotional side before the business side. Takeaway here.
And I think one of the things, if you're listening to this and you're saying, yeah, but my husband or my wife or whatever, that might be a sign that you need to call your therapist, right? Because that's, you know, people want the blame. Yeah, but their story's different. I'm different. You know, terminal uniqueness, whatever. You know, it's amazing how many people marry Prince Charming and then divorce a narcissist. Right? It's statistically impossible. Right. So, you know, I think the one thing is that you can get on the internet too, and you can find, you know, these waters of desperation, clickbait and memes all kinds of things. But, you know, just do your research and find, you know, find a good coach or therapist, right, or whatever. And just, sure, just go down that path for a little. What do you have to lose?
What's my name? What's my name? What's my name?